Welcome into the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick with John Osher from the Hyundai Studios at the Miller Electric Center in Jacksonville. Bucky Brooks joining us from Los Angeles as we continue in this offseason. It is April 3rd. The offseason program is coming up quickly. The draft is just over 3 weeks away. And there's a lot to get to. The Jags have made another extension on defense. We'll get to that coming up. But Bucky, it's good to talk with you again, of course, this week. Since we talked last week, though, something happened between our alma maters, and it wasn't good for yours. What happened?
I don't know. It's baseball season. So what happened? Did Carolina play Alabama in baseball?
No.
I saw the Diamond Hills last weekend. I saw them play take on Wake Forest. I didn't see the Crimson Tide. So did I miss something?
You must have missed the Sweet 16 game because, you know, I'm not a bad – honestly, it's only the only two Alabama basketball games I watched all year were the last two.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's always nice when the guy who just learned that they have the sport at the school weighs in on the NCAA right. tournament.
So what I've learned is I should never go to an Alabama-Carolina basketball game in person because during my lifetime, the Tar Heels are winless against Alabama. I saw them when I was in school take on Alabama when they had David Benoit, Latrell Sprewell, Robert Horry. They played them in the Dean Dome, and Alabama ran them out the Dean Dome. And then I saw them in the Sweet 16. Took my daughter to go see the game because we were like, oh, you know, let's go see what they look like. They're right here in L.A., and it wasn't what we wanted. So
you were there. I didn't realize you were actually at the game. Wow.
Oh, I was in the building. I was in the building, heartbroken and crushed.
Yeah, it's like
out.
I emailed Bucky this weekend. Everybody's playing for second place this year.
Maybe. UConn's you never know.
Yes, you do.
No, because I've seen this movie before, and I've seen this NC State movie happen to me when I was a kid, 1983, where they shouldn't be, and yet they still are. And you look up, and they cut down the nets with Lorenzo Charles dunking it in. So you never know. It's a tournament.
I've never seen a team go on a 30-0 run. That was wild to me.
I get it. And that Houston team, I mean, it's a little similar. Remember Houston-Louisville that year, Bucky?
Yeah.
Where it was one of the great, at the time, run and dunk games, and they sort of looked unbeatable. I know we're talking, it was a football podcast, but UConn plays so well together. And they look like a lot of the teams that people thought were going to be dynasties, you wanted them to look. Boy, this team's good. I mean, this team plays together. And, you know, they sort of play to me. They reminded me, remember the San Antonio team that rolled Miami out of the 7 or 8 years ago?
Yeah.
They just play so well together. This seems like a college version of that team. I couldn't tell you a UConn player. I don't follow it that much. But, boy, they're pretty to watch.
Yeah, no, it's a great team. And I think the one thing that everyone can agree upon is everybody tunes in for March Madness, whether you're a casual fan or a big-time fan. You have your NFL players in the locker room talking about, like, what's going on. It's a great tournament to watch because you talk about just the team game and what we're seeing. Look, it's fascinating. We'll see if UConn can get it done. Look, it's been a great tournament so far.
There's a great clip from Larry David I just saw. Where he goes, how am I supposed to follow Drake?
Yeah, right.
And it's so true. Everybody, all of a sudden in March, I'm sitting here talking about, well, they compare to the great. I mean, what am I talking about?
Who all knows all this stuff? It's amazing. It's the Huddle Up Podcast. Let's get to Jaguars news. Late last week, linebacker Foye Oluokun signing an extension, 3 years, a reported $22.5 million guaranteed. The extension lowering his cap number. He led the NFL in tackles, of course, in 2021 with the Falcons and 22 with the Jags. Finished fourth in the league last year in total tackles. So what do you think, Bucky? I mean, a guy who has been productive, a guy who was a free agent addition here a couple of years ago, signing an extension, this seems positive, right?
Yeah, I think it's really positive. And what I would say is if you look at the guys that have been signed, the Jaguars are clearly jumped in on high character guys that are professionals, guys that can get it done. And so with the Oluokun coming back, the extension is rewarding him not only for the production on the field, but the leader that he's become off the field. When you're around this team, look, man, he's the unquestioned leader of that defensive unit. Verbally, in terms of like making sure he inspires the team, but also the way that he goes about his business. So you want to reward those players as you're beginning to form and kind of establish a nucleus that's going to be here for the long haul. Foyer Luakon is one of the kind of guys that you certainly want in the building.
Yeah, I give Foyer a lot of credit. Yeah, you don't often or you don't always sign your free agent signings to a veteran contract, to a next contract, because they're usually a couple years in and out the door. So it's hard to not be in that rotation, if you will. The other side of the argument is, you know, could they have drafted and brought the cycle through? Meaning, you know, you usually want to sign free agents and then draft their replacements and have them move on. You know, I'm not sure that happened with the Muma, Ventrell Miller, Devin Lloyd. I think there were some, you know, hasn't quite fulfilled the draft expectations there, so you need to keep Foyer. I don't know if that's ideal, but that happens at times when you're trying to maintain and build. You don't always draft perfectly. But in Foyer, just in talking about Foyer, credit to him for being a guy that you want to re-sign. That's not always the case with free agents, Bucky.
No, it's not always the case. And so I think in his case, he's done a really good job of establishing himself as a standout player in the defensive scheme that they played previously. He's been a great player in the locker room in terms of making sure that he holds people accountable. He does things the right way. We've alluded to Doug Peterson not liking the way the team finished, not understanding the urgency that they needed to get it done. Well, one thing we could never question, Foyer Luakon always plays with the urgency. He always brings the energy and the intensity. You want to make sure that you continue to fill the locker room with those kinds of players. And one of the ways you can do it is re-sign a player who has those traits and then make sure you surround them with other guys who have those traits. So now you can bring out the best in each other.
It's the Huddle Up Podcast, JP Shadrick, John Osier, and Bucky Brooks in the division. And this came out on Wednesday that the Houston Texans had made a trade for wide receiver Stephon Diggs. He is headed to Houston from Buffalo, a second-round pick, I believe, going the other way to Buffalo. But it just adds now to an offense in Houston that was really good in big moments last year, obviously down the stretch, with a young quarterback and the receivers, and now you just add Diggs to that mix. So the question, Bucky, for you is, with that addition, does that change any strategy for the Jaguars come draft time? Considering all these receivers and things that are piling up in the division now, does this change anything that what the Texans did on Wednesday?
It won't have a direct impact on how the Jaguars go about doing their business on draft day, but it certainly impacts how you want to build your team. You have to build your team to win the division. So as you look around the division and you look at the Houston Texans and what they've assembled on the perimeter to go with C.J. Stroud, you got to make sure that you have a lineup, a defensive lineup that can match up with that. You think about what the Tennessee Titans have done and taking Calvin Ridley from the Jaguars, adding him and putting him alongside DeAndre Hopkins, and what they will continue to add in the draft. You got to make sure that you have enough DBs to deal with that. And even the Indianapolis Colts and what they want to do with Anthony Richardson, they re-signed Michael Pittman. They have some young pieces, Josh Downs and some others. I just think it makes it imperative that you have, I would say, 5 or 6 DBs that can play and cover. And if this is going to be a team that morphs into a more of a man-to-man team, I do think you have to get multiple corners in the draft that can play that style. You can't just depend on free agencies and late free agent pickups, meaning guys that are signed later in the summer to come and play. You're going to have to get some young guys that can kind of get in the mix and play at a high level right away.
First, I think they need corners, so I'm all in with you. Second, Bucky, I am much more of a guy, and I get what you're saying. You got to pay attention to the division. But why not build your team to be the team the other teams want to beat in the division? You follow me?
I follow you. I think what we're doing is we're really talking about semantics.
That's exactly right.
This goes all the way back to, and you know, because you were around Bill Polian during your time in Indianapolis, I came into the league playing for the Buffalo Bills, and the one thing that they talked about before they ever talked about the playoffs, you got to win your division. The team has to be built to win the division because that guarantees you a ticket into the postseason. If you're the Jaguars, you have to look around and assess, hey, this is what these teams have. We're going to face each of these teams 2 times a year. For us to win, we have to make sure that we have lineups that can match up with the teams that we're facing, you know, more than any other team in the league. And so this is about being aware, okay, we need to make sure that we have corners that can play, that can cover. So it's not only assessing your team, like based on what the new coaches are doing, but also being able to look to the right and to the left and say, we need to make sure that we have enough people that can match up with 11 personnel groups.
I know we're going to talk about the draft a little later. I think it was you who said, maybe to me last week, Bucky, you could see this team taking two corners in the first four rounds. I'm kind of with you. I just wonder if it's not going to be a really corner-heavy draft, come back and get a receiver in the second round. That, to me, seems like the formula. I'd almost be surprised at this point if it doesn't follow it.
Yeah, no, I think we have to get to that point where we're thinking about that. And I know we have young guys in the fold. We talk about Buster Brown. We talk about Junior being able to play. They've been on the field. But if the Jaguars are going to make this transition under Ryan Nielsen, they have to get young guys that can play man-to-man. They talked about wanting to play press man and those things. And with the contract status of Tyson Campbell and some of the other guys in the back end, you have to begin to have contingency plans for 2025 and 2026 if you're not able to resign those guys. And so part of it is taking care of the team now, but also setting it up for the future. I think based on when you look at the depth chart, you have to go big in the cornerback class this year. And also, it's the strength of the draft. Why not kind of fish in that pool with all the talented players, because all the talented players are at the cornerback position.
Plenty ahead. We'll return with the top 30 visit season. It's well underway. Prospects visiting teams in the coming days and weeks. And more from Bucky Brooks in just a moment on the Huddle Up Podcast. Welcome back to the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick, John Osher, and Bucky Brooks. The 2024 draft is almost here, and the Jaguars are on the clock. At 17, at least, they'll be on the clock. Join us at Everbank Stadium Thursday, April 25th, for the official Duval Draft Party presented by Donovan Air Electric and Plumbing. We're getting the party started at 7 p.m. Tickets are free. Register today at jaguars.com/draftparty.
That's right in my budget.
Free is for me.
Free is for me.
That's how that works. Hey, it is that time of year, Bucky. Our pro days pretty much are done, right? At LSU usually was kind of historically one of the last ones. Is that right?
Yeah, we're pretty much done with that part. We've now moved over from pro days to private workouts and visits, top 30 visits. We've seen a handful of guys parade in and out. You guys have seen them kind of come through the building. You're now beginning to get to the final stages of the pre-draft process. The top 30 visits are really it's the last time that you have an opportunity to meet with the guys, to bring them in the building, spend time with them, have dinner, really get to know who they are. So you begin to really get a feel for how are they going to be in the building? Do they fit the culture of the team that you've established? All those things. So yeah, we're nearing the end of the process. And so top 30 visits certainly signify that.
And Bucky, you've been involved with this. How much, how much gamesmanship is involved with some of the top 30 visits? Do teams bring in guys that they're not going to pick necessarily to throw their people off? Is there a lot of that? Or how does the, are the top 30 always guys they're mega interested in that they haven't talked to already that they want to clean up on? How does that sort of break down?
No, I think a lot of times you don't have enough to waste time. So you don't want to send up like smoke signals and try and throw people off your scent. A lot of times the top 30 visits are reserved for guys that you really want to get to know better, whether it's medical stuff, whether it's just interview, whether it's cleaning up their character and background stuff so you feel more comfortable with them. You typically don't waste your top 30 visits. So all the guys that we see come through are guys that you would anticipate the Jaguars being very, very interested in and kind of being players. If you get to the right round value, you get to them and those players available, you can expect to see some of these names that have come through the building. Some of these guys will be Jaguars down the line.
You know, and from a player's perspective, from a prospect's perspective, some of the top-end guys will probably go to a bunch of these, right? And the balance of time is one thing, but then if you're eating dinner at all these places and being entertained and shown around, it's a busy couple weeks for some of these high-end prospects, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, it is a busy few weeks. It can be tough on them for sure when it comes to moving around, making all the travel plans, learning different offenses and defensive schemes, because some guys will bring you in the top 30 bids and they put you on the board and ask you to learn stuff where they've given you homework, a little homework from combine workouts or the pro day, and they want you to be able to kind of put that information into play on the whiteboard when you come in. So it's a lot of work for them. It's a lot of memorization. And at the same time that they're doing all these visits, they still got to figure out when to work out, because the most important part is once they get drafted, they have to go to a new city in a week or two, and they got to start performing in rookie mini camps and OTAs and those things. So you can kind of get a sense of the maturity and the professionalism of all these prospects based on how they handle themselves throughout the visit. Are they really committed to continuing to work on themselves while being on the road, trying to make positive impressions for teams and decision makers? Or are they just kind of enjoying the buffet line and enjoying the parade circuit as they go from city to city meeting all these different people?
That sort of reminds me, I'm sure Fred's told you this story, JV. Mm-hmm. Fred Taylor at his pro day, it's a little bit different. You're talking about the buffet line. He went to his pro day. He had gone to a speed camp. Remember, Tom Shaw's speed camp was a big deal back then.
Oh, yeah.
And he had gone to the speed camp, and probably in early February, his pro days would have been in March. I hope I'm getting the story right. And Tom Shaw, after like a day, said, "Hey, I can't do much for you. You know, you're really fast." And he said, "Let's be honest, you're not going to get faster being here." So Fred, basically, this is the 90s, he said, for the next 3 or 4 months, I kind of hung out in South Florida, went to a couple of yard, you know, house parties. And then he went to his pro day, ran 4.29.
Yeah.
So
maybe
some
maybe
guys are different,
relax.
Rocky. Right.
Relax.
Fred didn't worry about the whiteboard.
No.
But
no, give me the
that's
ball,
special.
Get out the
but
way.
I always loved that story. He goes, yeah, they told me I really didn't need speed camp.
We can't coach you. Sorry. You are fast.
I love Fred. He's the best.
He is. This is the Huddle Up Podcast. JP Shadrick, John Osier, and Bucky Brooks. All right, well, up next, the off-season program. It's right around the corner, April 15th. Strength and conditioning begins a couple of weeks.
OTAs.
And
OTAs
then
OTAs right after that.
Not far after that, John.
You
got a few weeks away from primetime John Osier.
Babe, I have an advent calendar for OTAs. Mm. I just open them up 23, 22, 21. Can't wait. It's going to be the best this year.
I can't. I love it. I love it, John. You know how much I love OTAs and those things that I thought I may come down and kind of help you tabulate some of those completions and miss assignments and who's hot, who's not, all of those things during OTAs. I'm just waiting to get full clearance and to make sure that I can go out on the field and watch that. Take some.
Oh, you'll
be
allowed. You'll be
load
allowed.
Off of you. Some of that load, you know?
Yeah, they'll let you out there. Now, there is some importance to it this year. With so many new guys coming in, you have 9 free agents coming in.
That's a lot.
Which is a huge turnover for veteran guys. So this year, I will say that they're a little more important for players such as that.
They also are voluntary.
They are very, very voluntary. Not for me, but they are voluntary for a lot of people.
And then, hey, we're 3 weeks away from the NFL draft. I mean, this is snuck up on us, Buck. I know you're in the weeds every single day on this stuff, Buck. But here we are, 3 weeks out. And all right, if you're in terms of a leadership of a team, if you're, let's see, GM Bucky Brooks, right? What's on your checklist the next 3 weeks after these top 30 visits are done? What else do you have to get accomplished the next 3 weeks before draft night?
So we're in the final month of the process. There are a few things. After the 30 visits, we want to make sure that everyone has all the information that we need to have on the player. All the background information checks out if they've had any character issues in their background. We want to make sure that security is on all that. We get all the documentation on all of these issues. What we're trying to prevent now, draft day surprises. Something comes up from the past that it sprung on us. We don't know. We don't have information on it. So now we can't make a good decision on whether we want to take this player or not. So you're getting all the background info, probably about 2 weeks to 10 days before the draft, the medical team will come in and they'll go through and talk about, hey, here are the guys who have issues. Here's the risk assessment on all of these guys. We can put these guys on the board or they can take them off the board based on what the doctors say. And then the final part of it is just scrimmaging out what we call the cluster buster, the guys that are closely graded. But how do we want to stack the board in order? If there are three closely graded corners, what is our preference for one, two, and three? Do we feel good about all of them, or do we need to put a little separation between some of these guys? So it's just scrimmaging through the last minute details, how you like the groups, getting the order right. So when you get to draft day, you just let the board unfold and you just kind of take the players that are right there for you.
Okay, Bucky, but I'm going to ask you this. I get that, you know, every GM I've ever been around wants to tell you that they just let the board fall. And then once you get to round three, you're taking the highest guy on your board. And yet you always look at drafts and you know that they didn't take five offensive linemen, meaning they're taking a little bit positions. And I guess what I'm asking is, how does the strategy take place pre-draft where they say, okay, we're taking the highest graded player, but we have to address corner, wide receiver. I assume teams this year, for example, are looking at, hey, there are great cornerbacks in this draft. So, and this is the way I think the Jaguars might be thinking. Let's take a great corner because there's really, really, really good receivers going to be available at 48 when we take it. But I assume there's sort of strategy thought that goes into that all through the draft. Am I right, or is it just pulling cards off the board?
No. You're 100% correct, and it's really a bigger question. So a couple of things that you have to go into the draft knowing. You got to know where you're strong and where you're weak at. You have to know the positions that you would like to address, but you don't want to reach to address those positions. You then have to take all that information, put it to the side, and then look at the draft as it presents itself. So there are two boards that we'll work off of. There's a vertical board where if we put 150 prospects on a board, we're just ranking them from 1 to 150, 1, 2, 3, all the way down. Then there's the horizontal board where it's broken up by position groups. So your quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends, offensive tackles, guards, your edge players, linebackers, et cetera, et cetera. And then those guys are ranked in order by grade. And when you go to those situations where now you're drafting, so we have the 150 board where it just tells you these are the best in order. You're then looking to see, okay, well, we've already addressed offensive tackle. There are two positions of need. We got cornerback, and then we have wide receiver. Okay, let's look at what's available and how we have them graded. And sometimes you may have the corner graded over the wide receiver, but how big of a difference is it? Are we talking about a 6-7 grade versus a 6-6 grade where you just like a negligible amount? Or are we talking about, hey, we have someone rated at a 7-0 and somebody at a 6-5? In those instances, you never would go for someone who's a 6'5 over a 7'0 because that's too big of a disparity. But if they're close, 6'7, 6'6 based on need, you can make that move. But they need to be in the right area when it comes to assessing their talent and what their potential will be when they get to the Jags. So it's a very nuanced discussion that Trent Baalke and company are having when it comes to the prospects, the players, and filling needs. But the player's talent needs to be comparable before you take someone that may have a lesser grade than somebody else. You always want to take the better player.
That's basically how teams protect them from themselves.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a checks and balances.
Emotional decisions.
If you're on it and you have a real draft room where people are encouraged to speak up and kind of go back and forth, but then you hold people accountable like, oh, wait a minute, we're out of line. We're talking about taking this guy who's well below some of the other guys on the board like this. This doesn't make sense. This is bad on our end because we're deviating away from the philosophy. If we're saying we're going to take the best player, then we need to take the best player. And even if it's at a position of need. So, for instance, let's just use this. So everyone has kind of gone at the Jaguars about taking Chad Muma, right? When they took Chad Muma a couple of years ago after taking Devin Lloyd, they already had Fortier Lewicon. Why would you take another linebacker in that round? Well, maybe Chad Muma was graded significantly higher than anybody else on the board. And so if you don't take him, now you're going against your philosophy. So that's how you get into those situations where maybe you're puzzled on the outside wondering, why would they take him? They already have that position filled, but it doesn't make sense. That might have been why Chad Muma was the pick as opposed to somebody else. He carried significantly higher grades than everybody else. That's why they did it. Now, it doesn't mean that they were right. Maybe they misevaluated him as a player, but that may go to the thinking of why he might have been the pick of that situation.
There you have it. We've got three more weeks to discuss. Of course, we'll have, as we mentioned, the draft party coming up at the stadium on Thursday, the 25th. That should be a fun time. Of course, our coverage throughout the entire weekend on Jaguars.com coming up as well. Bucky, great talking to you again, as always, each and every Wednesday here on Huddle Up. And, hey, let's do it again next week.
Yeah, look, man, let's do it next week. And since you brought up your Roll Tide role and your allegiance that I've never heard about basketball, I guess in the Final Four, I now have a rooting interest for someone. And hopefully UConn can go back-to-back.
I saw that one coming a mile away.
Go Huskies.
That's Bucky Brooks. That's John Osier. I'm JP Shadrick. Thanks to Joe Fortunato and Brent Reber. And thanks to you for listening to the Huddle Up Podcast.